have found the Business Broker Growth Show with your host, Jason Cutter. This is the podcast for brokers who are ready to stop hoping for deals and start growing their pipeline. Our goal is to bring you strategies, stories, and insights that will be a catalyst to move you quickly from transactional deal makers to trusted advisors. Time for Business Broker Growth.
Hey everybody, Jason here with another guest episode on the Business Broker Growth Show. Thanks for tuning in. Welcome. And I am excited today. I've got an engineer turned business broker with me, Mr. AJ Ramsey. He is the managing director of Transworld Business Advisors of Eastern North Carolina. See, I did it, AJ. I got it on the first shot. AJ, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. Very, very happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited. Like I said in the brief intro before introducing you here, is that what's fascinating is always the journey that brokers take to get to being a business broker, right? Like what they've gone through to get to this point, what that experience means. And yours was a little bit different, definitely different than most I've spoken with, where your background was engineering. So let's start there. Let's talk about kind of that background. And then what was that transition like into business brokerage?
Okay. I always tell people I have a lot of gray hair and I earned every one of them. So I've been at it for a while. But also I think that probably helps me a little bit as, and we can talk about that as we go through. But I did start off life as an engineer, actually a structural engineer specifically. I went into design build consulting firm. Spent a number of years doing that. That's reflected in a lot of my business now. I still love construction and trade services and those sorts of businesses. I have affinity for them. Technically, I am agnostic, but if you look across my clients, it's a lot of construction, trade services, manufacturing, industrial. Like those folks, feel comfortable with them. I'm their biggest fan. I want them to have good exits. But my path was circuitous, I guess you'd say. I started off there. I always say I went from low tech to high tech. I actually stopped about 10 years into my career, got my MBA, and then I went from the more of the engineering construction side actually into high tech. Spent a number of years in software and then in the hardware side of high tech. But across all my corporate career, if you want to call it that, most of my jobs was working with clients, was in more in the sales and marketing side of things, is being able to take complex topics and break them down to so other people can, understand them, which I think it plays well for what we do. Cause as anyone knows who tries to sell business, there's a lot of spinning plates and there's a lot of complexity to it. And you want your clients to feel comfortable with what you're doing. So being able to articulate what's going to happen and give them advice for the process is I think one of the key things about it. Also, just with my background, I probably walked through 200, 300 different manufacturing plants. I have, industrial facilities, all kinds of project work. So I think that helps just the breadth of background, being able to relate to people. Like I said, being able to have experience working with people has been a good part of my business. That's why I enjoy what I do. And we were talking the other day sometimes. I mean, if I didn't have the depth of background I have, sometimes I think I would be in trouble because it helps me, like I said, to understand the vagaries of a particular industry or a job or a company or something like that. A lot of times I've talked to other people that have had similar issues or I can understand why they're doing well versus not doing well. I like the fact that I came into business brokerage kind of later in my career and I did have an opportunity to see a lot before I got here.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting too, when I first hear engineer and then we'll layer on the structural engineer, obviously you've made it successful in business brokerage. And we'll talk about some of the indicators of why I know that's true. But usually when I hear engineer, I think someone who's really good at the math, the science, the calculations, the stuff that you and I have spoken about, which is like reducing risk and trying to calculate and look at all the angles. And in my experience with engineers, it's very rare to find an engineer who can also break down complex things into simple things. I had some opportunity years ago to be a part of a research and engineering organization. And so many people you talk to, they were just so brilliant, but you couldn't talk to them about anything. Like they were just on their own wavelength of what they were doing and understanding. And so I think it's interesting that you know, in that category of being able to bridge that mode, then layer on the business, then go into the high tech, like you said, and then, you know, be able to transition. When did you realize that you wanted to get into business brokerage, intermediary work, or what was the trigger for that?
Well, my wife and I are both very entrepreneurial, and we had talked about doing, you know, stuff on our own along the way. And we just, you know, it's funny. I talked to my partner who also went to business school. We went to two very good business schools, and we always talk about this, but this was probably 25, 30 years ago. And at that point in time, when you talked about entrepreneurship, it was like, well, what's your killer app? You know, what's your business plan? You need to go talk to venture capital. It's funny how no one ever mentioned, hey, guess what? You can buy a business with existing cash flow. You know, they already have customers. They already have a brand. It really boggles my mind. These were tier one business schools, and it just didn't come up because we always laugh. It's like, yeah, if someone had told us this earlier on in the game, we would have gone out, probably have done that and built our own business. But no one did, you know, and it's funny. He actually managed a 75 man engineering firm. He got to the point where he got really burnt out. He got into this. He was actually an MBA classmate of my wife's, actually. So he called a few months in and said, hey, this is what I'm doing and it looks good. I'm having fun and I need some help. I think he was angling for her. He got me. I don't know if that was second place or not. But just in my corporate career, it made more sense. We've actually have since gone back and added my wife as well as some other folks. But yeah, I always say this business kind of found me as opposed to me finding it, but it was very fortuitous because, like I said, you know, I'm at a point in my career where, you know, I had done a little entrepreneurial stuff on my own, not a lot, but I understand how unique entrepreneurs are. I mean, it's a tough gig, right? You do a lot of work you don't get paid for. It's tough. It's stressful. You know, these guys are women. Most of my clients are men, but they're my heroes, right? I mean, they've spent, and everybody, if you look across my portfolio, everybody I'm dealing with, you know, are retiring business owners. They've had good businesses that have been around for decades. For whatever reason, the kids don't want it, or they just need to transition it on. You know, it's like, I want them to have a good exit. I feel very responsible for that. I mean, they've spent a lot of years employing people, paying taxes, supporting the little league teams, all those sorts of things. They deserve a good exit. I take that very personal that I can help them do that, because that's kind of what I feel my role is. So I'm enjoying it because I think ultimately, hopefully I'm adding value. I mean, we want these businesses to live on. Some of the areas that I cover are very strong urban areas. Some of them are more rural areas and they need these businesses. Like I said, some of them can be large employers in a local economy. So we want them to live on. And, you know, I'm happy that I get to participate in that.
It is a wild thing to think about. And it's tough because once you see it and once you're in it, like let's say you from your side and my from my side with, you know, business brokerage and the business of it and what is there, it's tough imagining that people don't know about it. But as you're talking, I'm reflecting back to my time getting my MBA as well. And the closest you got to anything on entrepreneurship is come up with a business concept over the semester, make a business plan and calculate these things and a marketing plan and like a financial plan and run the calculations and do all those things so you could start a business, right? Mm-hmm. And now I know there's, you know, universities and courses for entrepreneur through acquisition. And you know, they're teaching that it's more aware, but that was never a thing. And then I also think about the other side, like I'm thinking about your part. And I think, you know, when you say rural businesses, especially I'm thinking in my mind, is like how few business owners out there actually realize they could sell, right? The option isn't to close the doors and just walk away with whatever money you have or hand it down to your kids or your employees. Like there's this other option that wildly enough, most people don't understand. I mean, I'm guessing you see that a lot, just like most brokers do, right?
Yeah, I always say my number one issue probably is brand awareness on just what, you know, business brokerage is. And then you explain it to people, they're like, oh, yeah, that makes perfect sense, but they've never thought about it. And, I had the good fortune of this year, I am the president of the Carolina Virginia Business Broker Association, right? So it's our regional section for IBBA, our governing body. And when we have get-togethers, it's like, I don't look at people in this room as my competitors. They're my colleagues. There is so much work out there. I do a lot of work with a particular SBA lender. I'll tell you, it's Live Oak. So they're large, right? They do a lot of business. They happen to be headquartered here in my home state of North Carolina. But the gentleman who's the regional vice president says, yeah, probably only 40-45% of my deals have a broker involved. And I was kind of flabbergasted by that. I'm like, really? It's like how are they finding us? Well, they're just finding me, you know. And so it's important. The role we do, I think, is very important. I had a conversation a couple of weeks ago with one of my closing attorneys, and he was like, "Oh yeah, we have a big deal going on right now. There's no intermediary involved." He goes, "I hate it." He goes, you know, we're constantly on the phone trying to track down financials and get information from them. He goes, you guys, I mean, it's so much easier when there's an intermediary involved, right? And ultimately it's cheaper for my clients, right? Because, you know, they're paying lawyers to try to figure out their balance sheet, you know? So it is funny how when you explain it to people, it just kind of clicks, you know? And then we're not helping ourselves by some people say we're intermediaries. You start getting in. I do some low mid market stuff. So then you have investment bankers and you have all these different terms. You know, I kind of keep it simple. If I say business broker, you know, people kind of understand that. And then I have to explain to them, no, it's not like a real estate broker. Here's the differences. You know, it's a different game. But at least there's probably easier for them to kind of grasp upon that and what you're doing.
Yeah. And it's so fascinating because if we think about the closest equivalent that comes to mind for me is residential real estate. And so imagine if only 40% of residential real estate transactions with a lender involved real estate agents. Mm-hmm. Like that would be crazy. And like that would mean some kind of system breakdown. Right. And obviously the realtors have a good corner on the market to ensure that they are always there. They have some good lobbyists. But, you know, to think about that.
To interrupt you, you know, not be unkind to my real estate broker friends, selling a house typically is you go into a neighborhood, they're all $150, you know, dollars a square foot or whatever it is. It's a fairly straightforward thing. I mean, with all the complexities of a business transaction, it is really scary. And that's, you know, the numbers are out there that what only one in five businesses sells, you know, and most of those, like I said, don't have an intermediary involved. And it's tough. It's tough to get deals to work. There's the financial side of it. There's the emotional side of it. There's all those different things that we kind of, you know, we bridge that gap.
Yeah. And I know, cause I have a sneak peek, cause it is my show. So I have some good sneak peeks into what we're going to talk about, especially when we get to the growth part. So I won't steal all the thunder about, you know, the wave of potential businesses coming up for sale, but I know Andy Cagnetta, he was on the show and he told me, he's like, if everybody who was in the baby boomer demographic went to put their business up for sale, there's no way that it could be handled by the current amount of business brokers. It would take a ton more, mm-hmm. right? So going to your point of like in your meetings with the Carolina, Virginia business brokers or any meeting you're at with other brokers, it is no competition because you all couldn't handle it if they all did happen to go. If everyone suddenly became aware of the fact that business brokers is the best way to help them get their, you know, business to market, it would be crazy. And so it's fascinating to hear you say that so specifically, like the number one issue is brand awareness, not just of you and your brand and your business, but the role.
The entire industry.
The whole industry, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And imagine like if, you know, somebody had some health issue and they just didn't know there was a doctor that could help with that health issue. They're just like, well, I guess that's it. I just don't deal with it, right? I don't get help with that thing. That would be wild. So let's talk about some of your experience, because then I want to go back to the engineering here in a moment. So you've been doing this for how long? When did you start business?
7 years. I've been doing it for 7 years.
So yeah, 7 years. So over those 7 years, you have some really amazing designations. You've also got some awards, both with CVBBA, which is the Carolina Virginia Business Broker. You've got M&A Source Executive Club and then Transworld Presidents Club. And all of those in a short amount of time. What do you see as the key to doing that? Especially, and I'll just put this out there because you're fascinating because you don't fall into the parameter of the general ways that people get into business brokers, which is they had a business, they sold it, it went good or it went bad, and now they're a business broker, right? So you were drafted in, you were recruited in. What do you see as the key to that success for what you've done in 7 years, which to me is pretty short time relative to others in the space?
Well, I am blessed by nature. I am very pro education. So from the get go, I have taken the time to learn my craft. You know, I feel responsible in what my role is and what I'm supposed to be doing, and I want to be able to do it well. Like I said, because for most people, selling their business is probably one of their largest financial transaction, if not the one. You know, they have so much of their net worth wrapped up into it. So like I said, I take that responsibility seriously. So I knew from the beginning, I knew that I needed to just learn. So between the IBBA and the M&A Source and the CVBA, as well as I'm with Transworld, we have our own training. I've always been a train first kind of person. That being said, you can't learn it all and you kind of have to step off you know, the bridge and just hit the road to get going. So I've also been fortunate to work with some other great brokers. And that's the great thing, I think, about the brokerage community. They're always there to help you, right? I mean, I have no problems picking up the phone. You know, especially when I was early on, it's like, okay, explain working capital to me, you know, those sorts of things. I do think my engineering background, at least I had some quantitative background. So the numbers aren't as daunting. The MBA certainly helped, you know, take some of the finance and you know, accounting classes that I didn't get in engineering school. So that part, you know, was worked out fairly well. But just knowing how to transact a deal and all the different pieces of it. But again, my engineering background in project management, that's kind of what we do. It's like we just get up, we break it down in pieces and we do it. So. And if I got stuck, I've had the good fortune of either being able to take a class and learn it or pick up the phone and call somebody. Like I said, business brokerage, even though we're kind of somewhat independent, like I said, we're all competing, but again, we're not, because there's so much stuff out there and people that have been around, been doing this for years. They've been some of the nicest, kindest people and you know, sharing their wisdom and what to do next. So,
yeah. Yeah, and I told you right before we hit record, because we were updating each other since we spoke previously. And I have this, I mention it all the time, I have a somewhat observational bias because I get to speak with brokers like you and others that are on the podcast and clients and, you know, potential clients for the business. And it's this observational view of really good professionals who are also very open and willing to share and educate, and it feels very abundant mindset. Again, in the ones that I talk to, I'm sure there's, you know, the biases that I don't talk to everyone. So there's the ones who don't want to share and don't want to talk and don't want to give away their secrets. So it is great. That's why I wanted to bring that up, because I know that that's a big deal and the education is important for you in the industry and just in general. And I like what you said, like it's only so much, right? You can learn so much, but then you have to, it's like, you know, reading a book about swimming. At some point you got to just get in the pool and then start swimming. And hopefully someone will keep you afloat long enough till you figure it out. Right.
Yeah. Well, and then I was fortunate too, that in my corporate career, I had got a lot of experience to do stuff, which confidence does help, you know, like I said, and we can talk a little bit more about it later on. But I mean, you know, education, confidence and your ability to transact. And then I think just the basic communication, we've talked about that. I've always been more on the sales and marketing side of things. You know, I was in engineering, yes, but I was in consulting engineering, which is where you're having to deal with clients and customers and solve their problems. you know, that that helps being able to relate to people as well. So, and again, I think the long career, just having seen a lot and done a lot, again, is you can bring some credence to the table when you're talking about someone. It's like, oh yeah, I've heard about that, or I've seen that, or I've heard, talked to other owners that have had that issue, or, you know, and for some of these businesses, I mean, I am amazed at the businesses that people have built. Number one, I'm amazed at how many businesses there are. It's like, God bless America, because if you're an entrepreneur, you can figure out a way to make money. You can have a business doing it, right? And I've seen people that have made very good livings doing some things that I'm not creative enough to think about, right? But you know, they're out there, and it's a joy to learn from them and see what they're doing and hear their approach. And on the buy side, for the buyers, it's like some of these businesses, like I said, I deal mostly with longstanding businesses, retiring business owners, and they're very good businesses, but just small tweaks, you know, some software, some upgraded management techniques and stuff, right? They're at the end of their careers. They're not pushing real hard sometimes. You know, these are golden opportunities for people to come in and buy really successful businesses and take it to the next level, you know? So that's exciting as well for them.
Yeah. And I'm sure, especially from the consulting minded side of you with this, right? So the engineering, but you were consulting, like you said, the sales and marketing, all those pieces. And then, you know, in the high tech side, is what's that balance, or what's the tipping point with a business that you're working with that wants to sell, and they're in a, if it ain't broke, don't fix it mode, but there's value being left on the table, that, you know, what should they fix, or what is a buyer going to want to fix? You know, and where do you, you know, how do you figure that out? I'm guessing that's really comes down to urgency and timeline, right? For when they want to sell.
Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing about our profession, right? Is that the buyers, for the most part, don't prep their businesses to sell, which is unfortunate, because they, you know, I always tell somebody, you know, when you're buying a business, you're buying a cash flow stream, right? How much money does that business make minus the risk the buyer sees, right? And the risk are all the holes in the deal, the hair, and all sorts of things, right? A lot of that, though, could be fixed if the buyer was engaged with an exit planner or even a broker. I don't specialize in that, but I know, I mean, I could tell them, you know, if they come to me a couple of years early, hey, focus on this, focus on that. You need processes. You need management. You need to wire yourself out of the business. You know, all those things that, you know, in the end will add so much more to their value if they would just take the time to do it. Flip side is that they don't do that, and we're dealing with that on the market. It usually gets discounted for that. And that's an opportunity for the buyer, which you can point out. I mean, you know, but I always tell my buyers, is like, look, you're buying a cash flow stream. Don't screw it up when you first buy it. You know, I don't know if it's the 6-month rule, 12-month rule, whatever, any major changes, you know, because you're paying for the cash flow stream. Don't kill the goose, right? This is laying the golden egg.
Right.
So there, it is unfortunate that more owners don't know about business planning or take the opportunity to do that. A lot of times they don't know. I mean, you know, especially like I said, when I'm working trade services, these guys are great technicians, great craftsmen.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's an electrician or an HVAC or plumbing or whatever, but they're not necessarily good business people, right? So, I mean, there's just little changes that coming in with a business background, it's like, that's kind of a big hole, and you can kind of help them trying to plug it. But it's really, if you're not there, you know, a certain time before the business goes to the market, you can't really remediate that, but it's an opportunity for someone else. So,
yeah, it's gotta be tough. And it goes back to the brand awareness, right? Of not just business brokers, but also what I said about business owners knowing it's even an option to sell, where, again, using real estate, is just what comes to my mind. It's like, you know, if you want to get, you know, good market value for your home, you remodel, you fix up that kitchen that has the appliances from the 60s, right? Like, you replace the bad carpet or redo the hardwood floors, and you give it a coat of paint and maybe windows, maybe, you know, whatever that makes economical sense, so you can get that, you know, return on that investment. Mm-hmm. And I hear so many stories about business owners who don't realize it until they're done and they're ready to sell because they're burnt out. And then what you're saying, like the technicians using Michael Gerber's E-Myth Revisited, mm-hmm. I'm sure you're familiar with. And like the, you know, a lot of businesses are started by that technician who's really good at the job, but not the business and all of the other things. Mm-hmm. And if they don't cover all those other aspects, then they basically got themselves into a position where they're just selling a job or mm-hmm. a job plus a few other things. And then, you know, that limits yeah. who wants to buy that job.
The classic working in the business, not working on the business at a strategic level. You know, and another thing, just to touch on something you said too, it's like so many people I talked to was like, oh, my mom or my grand, they had a business and they got to 65 and they just closed it down and, you know, sold off the land. And it's just, I cringe when I hear that now, because it's like, you know, every business, if it's established, is making money. There's goodwill. There's a lot of things in that business that they could, yeah. you know, but some of the parts is it's more than one plus one, right? You know, that's the synergies of a business. They have a brand, they have clients, they have all those things. There is value there. And with just a little bit of work and working with the right people, they could have extracted that. Because again, I'm sure that they've spent a number of years building that. They should be rewarded for it.
Yeah. And also, like, I think this is also interesting too, is that if you've put in all that effort, there's some goodwill, there's those packed, like, what could you get for it as is versus just shutting it down and getting nothing, right? And you may not get top dollar because you haven't been planning for this exit, but there's something in it. And not just that, but like, if it's providing value to customers, then somebody should continue it on, right? There's not just like your monetary payout, but it's like, you know, I hear stories all the time about restaurants. Like I had Dominique, the restaurant broker on the show, and he's talking about stories about people who just, they don't know you can sell a business, a restaurant. So they just shut it down and hand it back to the landlord, give up the lease. And then that's it, right? And if it was a good restaurant that people liked, now they're mm-hmm. missing out, right? And we've all seen those restaurants just close down.
Well, the one thing I probably was one of the things I guess that I was surprised about when I got into this business is there's just so many buyers out there, and there's ways to buy a business. There's money out there, right?
Yeah.
Almost any business, if it's a good business, and I'll define that, can be sold, right? By good business, I mean, you know, the owner is realistic in the pricing, you know, they have clean books. And they're reasonable in what they want to do. You can sell the business for them. There are buyers out there at all price ranges. And from my yeah. experience, you know, it's not a buyer's not finding is not the issue. The issue is finding a good business to sell. If it is a good business, it will sell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's, you know, it's like, if you have a good product, even with bad marketing, you can sell a good product, right? Like if it's a yeah. good deal, a good value, a good product, you know, you can sell it. And yeah. so I think that's generally what it sounds like is missing in the market is enough good product.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it's just people have good product, but they don't think about selling or they don't know how to sell. It overwhelms them. Yeah. It is. I mean, no one's typically most people I deal with have never sold a business before, and it is complicated. I mean, it's financials, it's legal, it's all these different things that are outside their comfort zones, and they can get overwhelmed by it, you know?
Yeah.
So,
and that very few people that I've ever seen or heard about has actually built their business to sell, like from day one or from early on said, I know I want to sell, so I'm going to build it this way. I'm going to have everything ready. So it's just a good, clean, you know, high quality packaged mm-hmm. product. And so that doesn't happen, probably, especially in the lower middle market or Main Street. It's probably not common.
Well, I think, and I don't know, this is more anecdotal. I seem to be seeing a lot, the millennials and some of the younger folks are more interested in business ownership. You know, you go out to TikTok and see, you know, there are definitely some influencers out there. Although I kind of laugh. I mean, I think back, you know, I'm a little bit older. I think back to the 90s or 80s or whatever with the, you know, the late night, you know, buy real estate, no money down type of things. And mm-hmm. unfortunately, yeah, there's a lot of that out there. It's like, you know, you're not really going to get a business for no money down, but at least no. they're thinking about buying a business and being entrepreneurial, which is probably yeah. more so than maybe my generation or some of the, you know, other generations that had thought about that.
Yeah, it is fascinating because you think about those late nights. I think of Don LaPree. I think that was like running ads and selling products. And I think I might have bought his kid at one point in one of those infomercials. It's just so compelling. But if you do think about it, like think about, you know, wasn't that long ago where entrepreneurship was just something you did because you didn't have anywhere else you could fit in and you couldn't maintain a job or you were unmanageable and you only could start your own thing. Or maybe you had an idea and a spark, but it was just like, I'm not going in the corporate world. I'm going to take my skills and be entrepreneurial, right? But it was not a good thing, right? It was something that, you know, most people didn't aspire to do or, you know, whatnot. And now it's a bigger thing. I remember Gary Vaynerchuk, he's been talking about that for a while, about his upbringing. Entrepreneurship wasn't a good thing, right? Everyone else is going to college, getting MBAs. Like, why would you start a business, go work for corporate, have a job for 30 years, you know? And then now it's just become so popular as a thing. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see in 5 to 10 years, this wave of buyers, the ETA and the you know, millennials or the corporate, let's say refugees, and this wave of people buying these businesses that were founded primarily by this baby boomer generation. What happens when they want to sell, or how well do they do at operating the business versus growing it, you know, from day one? Any thoughts on that? Like any, you know, if you were to forecast?
Well, like I said,
I won't hold you to it, but.
You know, being an entrepreneur takes a different type of person, right? I mean, there's a risk tolerance there. There's a, you know, an independence there. It's there's a lot of things. There's a lot of reasons why people aren't, not everybody are entrepreneurs or own businesses, right? It's tough. It's long hours. It's a lot of stress, a lot of responsibility, you know? But I find it ironic to your point, people like me that went to undergrad school, got a degree, and then been to master's, you know, I'm selling businesses for folks with a 2-year trade degree, you know, or maybe even not, you know, they learned plumbing from their uncle or whatever. They're multimillionaires, right? They're going out there selling these. But I mean, you know, quite honestly, I have some younger kids. It's like, you know, college is not for everybody. No. You know, go apprentice for the plumber for 5 years, start your own shop. And then by the time you're 35, 40, you can sell it and go live on the beach, right? Because AI is not going to replace the plumbers, electricians, and those guys, right? We're going to need them, and we're not producing enough of them. That's the one thing I see. I mean, I sold an electrical construction company. Somebody bought them because they had 100 electricians, right? It's like, it's great that they have work, but we need electricians. And I would talk to them. It's like, yeah, we go to the, whatever the group was, IEEE or whatever for electrical people. And it's like, yeah, everybody in the room's 50 or above, right? There's no licensed electricians that are younger than that. I mean, that's a great, you know, industry to get into because it's supply and demand, right? And like I said, that's not going away with AI or anything else. So
no, and not to go on too many tangents, but Mike Rowe, the guy from Dirty Jobs, he's done other stuff. He's been yelling about that for a couple of years now. It's like there's with the technology, people are going towards the technology or the fun stuff, or as I say, like everyone wants to be an influencer. You know, and a star online. And it's just like, but what's going to happen with all these trades that somebody has to manually do that can never be replaced by AI? And the moment AI replaces plumbers and electricians, in case someone wants to say, well, I could do it, like, we're all done anyway. Like at that point, like if it's wiring up a house and we don't need people for that anymore, then we're done, like it's over. But like, you know, where is that vacuum, and where is that as a, you know, people get into it and start those businesses, grow it. But to your point, like you said, entrepreneurship is not easy. So it seems like, oh, it's great. I just heard about this plumbing business that sold for X millions of dollars. Like, that's great. But it's, you know, it's not easy to wear all the hats, going back to the you know, trade founder mode. So question before we move on to the grow stuff, because I'm excited for that as well. Going back to your CVBBA, so the Carolina Virginia Business Brokers Association, you being the president, you know, one of the things that you told me was that historically the group, which is the same thing that the IBBA faces as well, is by business brokers for business brokers. But then there's this whole educational part where business owners don't even know that a business broker exists. So you've got like this club of people who are all helping each other, but where are the actual businesses at? What are you, I know that's a mission and one of the biggest things you're focused on, same thing with the IBBA. What are you guys doing to help with that? Like, what are you doing for the outreach, the education? What do you have planned to do? I'm just curious how you shift to kind of the external
support. Well, historically, you know, the organization was more of an internal focused organization. It was, you know, an organization of brokers for brokers, you know, and we did a lot of internal training and a lot of those sorts of things. But we really have tried the last couple of years to have more of an external focus, right? I mean, start doing more just, you know, you're in marketing, right? So just everything, just as simple as starting to do PR pieces, you know, getting the word out there when stuff happens. You know, just this past year, we did our first external event, right? We went to, there's a manufacturing organization in South Carolina. So we went to their event, had a booth there and said, hey, you know, there are brokers out there. If you want to sell your business, this is what we do. You know, I am constantly, if I take the opportunities like this to be on webcast or podcast and talk about what we do, I go to clubs. I mean, and that's probably one of the things I enjoy about my business. It is just the educational part, right? Just because I don't know what it is about these retiring business owners. It's like, oh, have you thought about selling your business? And it's like, oh yeah, in 2 years. It's always 2 years. I don't know why it's always 2 years, but I take the opportunity to kind of walk them through the process and they realize, hey, guess what? 2 years starts today if you want to, you know, sell it by the time you're now 65 and you're 67, because they just don't understand. So it's getting that word out there about that there are people out there that can help you, you know, our industry, what the step, you know, what the, you know, kind of break it down so it's not so nebulous and unknown and scary, you know, and just educate people. So we're doing that as an organization. I'm doing that on behalf of the organization as the president this year. It's just getting the word out externally because, to your point, it's still largely an unknown industry.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to talk to the business journals and the different folks, get coverage either in print or on the air or whatever, and just let them know our industry exists and we can help people at all levels, right?
That's great. Well, and I think that's so important. And it's you know, you'd think it would be easy to get information out there, but generally it's difficult. You think it's easier now because things are so digital that you could put out more stuff, right? You could have a podcast, you could do so much more, but also things are noisier. And fundamentally, here's the challenge, is your target demographic, which is business owners, they're busy in their business, running things, putting out fires, making payroll, like.
and you gotta know your audience, right? I mean, if I'm selling to a retiring business owner, chances are they're not on TikTok, right? Yeah. You know, they're you know, they're not, you know, social media probably is not their native language. Now the next generation coming up will be. So you got to make sure you're trying to match your message with the market. To your point, it's a crowded place. You know, people have short memory spans, so you have to tell them and then you have to tell them again. You have to tell them, you know, right?
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of stuff out there. And then now we are getting some of this chatter from some of the younger people about the, oh, you can go out and buy a business. No money. And that's in some of the searchers and things like that just kind of complicated. I mean, but that's all just noise. But the mainline message is, you know, we're an organization. I know IBBA does a lot to help support that. You know, what we try to do at the regional levels and as an individual level, I mean, I tell everybody, you know, every new agent that comes in our office, it's like, tell people what you do. Tell people what you do. I mean, you'll be surprised at how people respond to you when you explain to them what a business broker is and why and what you do.
Yeah.
Most people are fascinated. All right,
That's a great segue. Let's get into the broker growth tips and hacks. I know that you've got a good list. Obviously, you've done some things well to get some awards and accolades, to have done this for 7 years as part of the team, even to get your wife involved, things must be going well enough. So when you look at the list and you think about what you have done, what you would suggest other brokers do, especially at this time in business brokerage intermediary, what do you put on that list?
Well, I will start with what I just said. I mean, it's always tell people what you do, always give out business cards, right? Because you just never know. Business brokers can be applied to so many different circumstances, either the person you're talking to or someone that they know or whatever. I mean, so always let people know what you do. I always caution, or I always coach, you know, younger people coming up on number one, that's the first thing. Number two, when you are new, I know I've coached a number of people in our office. It's like, this is complicated. It is a lot of spinning plates, a lot of things, and people can be overwhelmed. And when you're new and you're starting out, break everything down. I always tell them, you probably most of the time when you walk into a room, you're going to be the expert in the room on selling a business. And all you have to know is the next step. You don't have to know all 26 steps that's going to get you to the closing table. You just got to talk to someone and understand what the next step is. And then you be the expert on that step, you know, so you can, because a lot of what we're doing is we're offering, you know, owners hire us because we know what I'm doing, and it gives them the confidence that we can get this to the end. So break it down and just know the next step. And then by the time you get to the end, after one or two deals, you kind of understand how it all comes together. But before that, just practice being the expert on the next step and being confident and you know, giving confidence to your client and to everybody else.
Before you move on to the next one, I think this is important because I think it's a good suggestion, which is to be an expert at the next step. And then, like you said, if you've done enough deals and over enough time, you become an expert at the process and you can see further down the path to avoid issues. Because I know when you're new at something, you're good at the next step, but you don't know three steps ahead, which means something might happen now that you're not going to feel the struggle and pain down the road, right? Which when we get to the lessons of the lost deal, I'm sure you have some stories you could share, but it's about that. And so, you know, and that's not a fake it to the make till you make it. That's a like, what's the next step? Okay, I know what the next step is. And then you start piecing those together. Mm-hmm. So I just want to throw that in there because I really like that piece of advice for new people or anyone. Let's say it's a new business industry that you haven't dealt with before. It's like, you know the steps, just focus on the next step.
Yeah, and that kind of flows into my next one is it takes a village. I hate to say it to be trite, but I mean, there's a lot of different pieces to this. Make sure you have a good team on your side, right? You know, I don't give legal advice, but I make sure I have a good lawyer that's involved, right? And hopefully I take the opportunity when I, if it's someone I haven't worked with, it's like talk to them, understand how they approach a business, their strategy, learn a little bit about their view of the world and how they're going to approach things. You know, same thing with accountants, you know, all those different people, appraisers, insurance people, all those people that it takes eventually to get a deal across the finish line, make sure you have good ones and spend time going out and meeting those people and working with them and understanding them. Just don't, you know, all of a sudden realize you get halfway through a deal and you need somebody and then you don't really know. Again, people in this industry are very helpful. You just pick up the phone and they can probably refer people, but take the time to meet them and learn what they're doing. Because again, that goes back to as you get more experienced, deals get bigger, deals get hairier. It's good to know when you can bring somebody in to help and what their view is going to be and how they're going to add value to the deal. So that's, I think, is key. Another thing I always tell everybody is communicate. This is one thing that I've learned in my 40-year career is it is very hard to over-communicate. It is very easy to under-communicate, especially when it's confusing and you have emotions and you have a lot of things going on. Break things down, small pieces, and communicate. This is what's going to happen next. This is why we're doing this. You know, this is just let them know. Your job is to be there, is to hold hands and to be in control of the situation. And a lot of that comes by just telling them, hey, because they don't know, right? This is where we're at. This is what we're going to do. The next step is probably going to be this, or eventually, you know, we're going to have to do this is going to come up. So we need to work on it now. And then, you know, so, but communicate, like I said, it's very hard, I think, to over-communicate, especially in something like this, which can be very complicated.
Yeah. And I think that's super important because I was writing this down. Then you said the hard to over-communicate, which, you know, if I have found no matter what, if you feel like you're over-communicating to your client on anything that you're doing, it could be consulting, it could be, you know, loans or financing, it could be business brokerage, over communicating to you will not feel like over communicating to someone else. Mm-hmm. And if it is, they can skim it, they might tell you, hey, I need less updates, I don't need to know all the time. But you know, keep in mind, like you said earlier, business owners probably never gone through this process before. They're selling something they didn't know they could sell, or they didn't know how the process went. It's a first time and probably a once in a lifetime. And so their mind, their human mind, is just spinning all the time of what ifs and seller's remorse and questions and doubts and worries and people in their life asking questions, or, you know, the things they have to keep confidential from everybody else. And so, yeah, I think that's huge if you want to be successful long term, is to just over communicate as much as possible. If you're listening to this and thinking, I need this level of authority, I just don't have time to build it, that's exactly what Business Broker Growth does for you. Most brokers know that they need consistent content, better positioning, and real digital visibility. They just don't have the bandwidth to create it or the systems to keep it going. That's what we do here. We build that whole thing for you. The content engine, the visibility strategy, and the authority signals, everything we've talked about here on the podcast. So if you want to add impact without adding another full-time job to your plate, go to businessbrokergrowth.com to learn more about what it could look like for your business.
You know, and that goes back to, you know, we touched on this earlier, right? There's a lot of stuff flying around out there. So you may tell them one time and they're just busy with something else, or they don't understand what you're saying until you get there. It's like, oh yeah, you know, I'm going to tell you again. We've talked about this before, but let me explain it to you now, right? Because they may be more receptive. As I said, I think it's very hard to over communicate in something as technical as selling a business with all the different intricacies of it. So.
Yeah. And one of the things that I have seen with humans that causes them to under communicate is what you and I mentioned it early on, is that once you do something, especially if you do it enough times and you become proficient at something, you forget that most other people are not proficient at it. Right. Like, you know, if you drove a car for a long time and then you have a teenager who's working on driving, like, you're like, wait a second. That's right. I mean, I've been doing this for so long. It's just second nature. I can do all kinds of stuff while driving at the same time. And then to watch somebody who's new, just like overwhelmed. And so it's tough. And so you have to always remember that nobody else knows how the process is going to go. And so you just have to constantly, you know, let people know.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I always feel my number one job is to be calm, right? To give my sellers confidence that we're in control of the situation. Let my buyers know that we're controlling the situation. You know, be that steady presence, because that's what they're hiring you for, right? Not only you need to know your blocking and tackling to be able to get a deal done, yes, but you gotta convey. You gotta be in control of the process, I think, and you gotta convey that, you know, that confidence. Even if, you know, you can be the duck with the feet going like crazy underneath, but on top of the surface, calm and collected, and just kind of keep everything from flaring up.
I'm pretty good at that. I told people that. I said, you'll never know. You'll never know how much I'm freaking out inside, or what I have going on in life, or what else is exploding all around me. Like, you'll never know. Pretty good at keeping that to myself. So, all right, let's move on to the final segment here for the main show, which is the deal that got away. So it's the lessons of the lost deal. You know, it's interesting to think about, like, the humans, the aspect, all of those things, the stuff that goes on. I know you and I chatting on the side, you know, a deal will die 3 times. I've heard 5 times, you know, just over and over again. But this would be one that, you know, either fully fell apart or something happened. And really what's fascinating for me, and the part that I'm always looking for, is what could have been avoided, or what's a good cautionary tale, brokers, sellers, buyers, of something like, let's learn from other people's scars of maybe ways to avoid something that could have been avoided. So what do you got?
Well, let me see if I can squeeze into, because you had asked me to think about this. So I had one, probably my most painful one, but then you also just referenced, actually, I have a closing that's supposed to be happening kind of right now, It didn't happen 2 weeks ago, because, you know, you hear these stories. It never happened to me, but we got to the closing table and the buyer walked literally, I mean, number one, it was a wet closing. I haven't done a, you know, a live closing in an attorney's office in years. This one was at the attorney's office, and the buyer just kind of freaked out, which, especially having been around the buyer for 4 months through this entire process, he had always seemed so calm, cool, and collected. For him to fall apart was a shock. You know, but, you know, the big thing was, let everybody calm down because people got heated. The sellers were really aggravated. But it's like, separate everybody, let everybody calm down. I spent the weekend, this happened to be on a Friday afternoon, spent the weekend saying, no one talked to each other. Let's just talk. Let me, I went out and I talked to everybody, got them to calm down. And we came back to the table the first of the next week and we rebuilt it, you know, as talked through the issues, found out what the glitch was, you know, in this case, the buyer actually did a mea culpa. He just kind of freaked out. He still wanted to buy the business, which is good. Luckily, the sellers still had some faith in him. Now he's had to spend some time kind of doing some other stuff to kind of rebuild that. And I'm sure he'll have to do some more going forward because it's a large business and the owners are going to be, or the sellers are going to be involved for a number of months post sale. But I mean, what are you going to do? Like I said, we were talking about this, you know, being an engineer, you know, you always like to break stuff up and analyze it and make sure you kind of, so many things about this business you cannot control. Right. So much of it's emotional and other things like that. There's nothing you can really do to prepare for that. Now, all you can do is say, step back, take a deep breath and try to solve the problem, you know, figure out what's going on, get some open communication and rebuild it. Right. That goes back to, you know, every deal dies and you just got to keep, we get paid, we drag it across the finish line. And hopefully that's happening now as we're talking.
yeah.
The other one I wanted to talk to is I did have a large design build firm I was working with a couple of years ago. Really good firm. It was a big deal. It was a plus $10 million sale. Had gone through the process, had brought 4 full price offers, only to have the sellers say, you know what, we don't think we want to sell now, and just walk after 18 months of work, which taught me, I am big on retainers now. So I didn't early in my career. Doesn't have to be big, but it's got to be something to be so that they have something at stake. You know, well, I walked away from this saying, I've spent 18 months on this, hundreds of hours, and I got nothing out of it. And it cost them nothing other than saying, you know, we didn't like the buyers. They really weren't what we were thinking, you know. So I always do retainers now. It can be small. I've heard 5%, 10%. I don't really care. Just as long as they have money on the table that they're going to lose, they bought in early on. They really want to sell and they're going to lose something. It won't cover me for my time probably, but it's just psychologically, it makes me feel better. Hopefully it makes them feel a little bit more attached to the process. So like I said, I'm big on retainers, especially you start getting to larger businesses. The sales cycle is going to be longer. You're going to have more invested into it.
Yeah. And I think it's smart. I think there's always a balance. If you don't charge retainers, then you're basically saying like, I'm so good, I'm going to commit to this, but you're also giving them the doorway out that says, well, if, you know, if I change my mind, right. And you could say, well, we have a contract, but you know, what's the performance on the contract or their penalty. So yeah, I could see that as being very important, especially, you know, again, it differentiates the sellers from, you know, with the ones that say, yes, I do want to do this. I want to take this seriously. And I view you as a professional, not just somebody who's going to help me do this thing that I'm thinking about versus we're doing this thing.
Yeah. Most of my owners, that's one thing is when there's money involved, they're a little bit more thoughtful if they're having to pay somebody to do something because they've had to run a business, right? They understand that. And at the same time, you know, I want them to respect the work that I'm doing. I mean, they don't see a lot of it. And I explained the process we talked about, but they're not seeing, you know, how many buyers I'm vetting and I'm talking to and all that background stuff. I give them updates, but at least this way it's like, look, my value is going to be worth it. You pay something up front for me to get engaged in this. And I think that's fair.
Yeah, I think it's really fair. And fundamentally, going back to humans, I mentioned this a bunch. You know, what sparked this in the pre-recording conversation was your closing. You know, it's happening today, hopefully right now or soon. And the story that led up to it, which you just shared. But, you know, obviously the balance between humans and unpredictability and all the emotions involved versus your engineering background and trying to control all the variables possible. So that, you know, if you're a structural engineer designing a bridge to be built, that, you know, it it's not built on emotions, and hopefully it works. But like this human aspect, and humans value what they pay for, right? And mm-hmm. you know, it's all relative, and everybody's different what they pay for and what they value. You know, $5 to one person could, you know, be different $5 to another. But you know, I think that's a good way to go. I'm always fascinated by that model and the pros and cons of both sides. So I am excited. I know that in the after show, the questions based on your answers for all this stuff, I think we're going to have a lot of fun in the after show. For people tuning in, AJ, I know that they can find you on LinkedIn. So AJ Ramsey, the links will be in the show notes. Also, the website is transworldeast.com. For your guys, the email will be in the show notes. We'll have the Carolina Virginia Business Brokers Association. I got that down really well, right, AJ? Mm-hmm. Like I feel like I've said it a bunch. We'll have that in there as well. But I appreciate you being here and sharing all this, just like all the guests that come on the show, but also, you know, truly just what you're doing to try to educate yourself, other brokers, and then business owners out there, and help them do the right thing. And I'm glad that you came on the show today. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. It's a lot of fun. At this point in my career, I could be doing different things, but I do feel what I'm doing is important, and I'm kind of passionate about it. And I'm always happy to talk to people about the industry and what we can do to serve our clients better and serve the industry better. So I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah. And, you know, like I've told you and other guests, I don't know where podcast episodes go. You never know whose hands they get into, whose ears they get into, whether it's business brokers, business owners looking to sell, or buyers just looking to understand more, or maybe getting to know you. So hopefully this finds the right people out there and builds some value and some education and gets people the help that they need. And for everyone tuning in, make sure to support the show and share this. If you know others out there who are looking to buy or sell, or maybe business brokers, share it. It's a good chance they don't know about the show. They don't know about business brokerage. They don't know about the industry. So, you know, do what you can to get this out there, you know, as AJ and I have been talking. But always, as I say, until next time, stop hoping for deals and start growing your pipeline.
Thanks for tuning in to the Business Broker Growth Show, hosted by Jason Cutter. If today's episode helped you think differently about how to build your pipeline and grow your business, share it with another broker who's ready to make the shift from hoping for listings to engineering them. Join us again for the next episode of the Business Broker Growth Show, where brokers become trusted advisors.